This is New Home Insights, the John Burns Real Estate Consulting Podcast. I'll be your host, Dean Worley. As the title promises, we're going to bring you insights into everything housing, latest trends, innovations, observations, and issues of the day. We'll bring in colleagues here at John Burns and also some major industry players from all across the country. This podcast is going to be quick, fun, but also hopefully make you think. So see you here every couple of weeks. Now let's get to it. Hey, listeners, this is Dean. Welcome to New Home Insights. Today, we have our guest who is C.R. Hero from Meritage Homes, and he was so brilliant and full of so much great information that we actually are going to cut it into two parts. So right now, let's listen to part one, and next week, we'll have part two. Okay, welcome to our latest episode of New Home Insights with John Burns Real Estate Consulting. I'm your host, Dean Worley. Today, we have another extraordinarily special guest. It's C.R. Hero. He's the Vice President of Innovation at Meritage Homes. C.R.?
Hi, Dean. How are you?
I am good. I hope you're well, too.
I am as well.
Let me give you a quick background on C.R. He's a really, you're a building scientist, right, who joined Meritage in 2009, and you lead their innovations and their kind of their performance initiatives and materials for really for making a better home. I mean, that's kind of your goal, isn't it?
It is. I've got graduate degrees in biology, chemistry, engineering, and philosophy. So it's either this or, I guess, chalk painting outside.
Oh my God. That's a lot of schooling, as they say.
It kept me out of the bars when I was a kid, so it was probably a good thing.
Was it? I don't know.
No, yeah, that's fair.
So essentially, though, you're sort of a building scientist with this background in biology and philosophy, et cetera. So what we're going to talk today is kind of innovation from three strains, really. We're going to talk first about sort of energy and energy efficiency. Then we're going to talk about the disruption in the industry going on, particularly with respect to offsite construction. And then we're going to touch on kind of the automation and kind of smart home and how that's going to play out in the future over time. So let's talk about energy first. I think this is very, very near and dear to you. I've heard you talk about it in the past. How critical is a home being energy smart now and going forward?
You know, I think all three of these things represent a disruption. And by that, I mean that there is a change in the way buyers are presented a product. And in doing so, it's changing the way that they think about quality and the choices they make. And that disruption means that buyers are going to change the way builders build to be relevant. And the way I challenge myself and our team at Meritage to think about it is, in 10 years, imagine what a relevant builder looks like. You know, how do they build? What are the materials they use with? What are their processes? How do they go to market? How do they interact with consumers? And do we look like that today? And pretty holistically, I hear, we recognize that the market is changing and that in order for us to be relevant, we have to change with it. And energy efficiency is probably the tip of the spear that for the last 10 years has really been pushing the industry to improve the value it brings back to its buyers. And so we've been looking at, you know, better insulation and better windows and better heating and cooling system and lighting and appliances and all just around one key metric. You know, can we invest a dollar to save a buyer five? And most buyers, when exposed to that opportunity, would preferentially choose that in the marketplace. And therefore, it's a very smart business decision to create value for our buyers, to leverage our expertise and the abilities of our trades to present something that's a better choice in the marketplace.
Is energy so important part of this disruption of this new builder, new home, because it's so clearly associated with cost? Is that really why it's all about money and that's the key consideration?
It absolutely does. If you think about the three keys to buying a house, it's going to be cost or affordability, the zip code it is, and then the overall kind of design, the dimensions and the bedroom counts and everything else. And so it's one of the key three, and it's probably one of the most pragmatic of those three. And the operating cost of a home represents about $200,000 over a 30-year mortgage for an average home in the U.S. And so if you can reduce that, there's tens of thousands of dollars of potential benefit that a buyer can either use to buy a bigger house than they thought they could, or have more disposable income to live a better quality of life. So I do think it does boil down to a very pragmatic energy efficiency.
I want to get into more the nuts and bolts of how you do it and how we'll be doing it, efficiency down the road. But first, I do want to, you know, I mean, here's the key question, right? How do you get folks to look at kind of a longer time horizon than they're used to in terms of buying a home, right? The upfront cost, you've talked about before, the upfront cost versus the total cost, the long-term cost, you just mentioned that. How do you get them to sort of change that time horizon when they're going into it?
Yeah, the answer is not well. We've been doing it for 10 years, and I think we're penetrating maybe 25% of what we should in the marketplace. And what I mean by that is, As somebody in the space, I buy differently than my buyers buy. And the only reason I buy differently is because I'm aware of other facets that are different than first cost, or I'm aware of total cost, which is, it's what does it cost me every month to own a home? And that includes both what I have to serve in my mortgage, but also what are my utilities cost and what is my maintenance cost? And because I know that, I make a slightly different value choice than the average buyer. And energy efficiency is an opportunity to inspire consumers to say, hey, let's give you some sort of indicator of this total cost. And let's inspire you that total cost is the more important variable, not the price tag when you first buy the house, because of the potential for that to swing $200,000 in true cost. You know, buyers often can save $10,000 and spend $80,000 in operating cost because of that quote unquote deal.
Yeah, that's you're right though. That's a tough sell, because it does push up. I mean, it costs more. The better, more efficient homes are going to be a little bit more of an upfront cost. So will it be a harder sell, or has it been for you folks a harder sell at the entry level because the upfront cost is so much a bigger part of the equation for that buyer?
I think so. I think California is going to be the test bed for all of these, because one, California has the most need for affordable entry-level housing. Yeah. And two, they have the most progressive requirements in building code. They've now adopted not only a very significant energy efficiency, but the requirement to put in renewable energy as a part of their code. So that those costs will be borne by the market. There's no choice. And so buyers are going to have a marketplace where they've got 1970s construction that will cost them maybe $100,000 more in operating cost, but in the marketplace can sell for $20,000 cheaper than a new home. And so that market is going to have to become educated in order for the requirements of the state in Title 24 to take effect. And I've built in California, and I've been really pushing for some reform that if you're going to improve the energy efficiency by requirement, you have to improve the transaction, which means that a buyer has to be aware of total cost. For example, if you buy in France, the transaction tells you what the average cost for an average family is going to cost every month. And so it's not just your mortgage. There's an energy efficiency label that translates into this affordability. It distills it down into dollars and cents. And I think that's going to be a necessary component for California to really realize its intentions. It's going to have a labeling process so that buyers can differentiate the true cost between a 20-year-old home, a 10-year-old home, and a brand new home built to this new code. And inevitably, that's going to pull in appraisals, and that's going to have to pull in underwriting, because if you can save somebody $150,000 in operating cost, you should have a different underwriting ratio. You should be able to qualify for $10,000 more mortgage if you're going to save $100,000 over that mortgage service.
So if I'm hearing you right, I think you mean that in sort of a truth in labeling, or at least an educational labeling in both the resale and the new environment to kind of heighten that discrepancy. Am I hearing that right?
I absolutely think that is the biggest remaining piece to transform the marketplace and to create the true value in the marketplace for energy efficiency. And it does have to include resale, because if you've got a 1985 home and you replace the windows and improve them today, even though you may have a better home that's more comfortable and cost less to operate, there's no mechanism in the transaction for the next buyer to be aware and to value that investment in better windows, or pulling out the old HVAC system and upgrading it, or even putting on solar panels. All of these upgrades have an economic value, and they're very difficult for the next buyer to monetize. And so we, as an industry, really need to support changes to create mechanisms to properly value everything included, not just the mortgage.
And that really will kind of heighten that difference between new and existing. I mean, I think that's something that I think we've talked about this. I'm forgetting the guest on this podcast, where we're seeing a bigger gap between new home pricing and resale pricing in a lot of markets across the country. And a big driver of that is that the new home are continually innovating and building better homes, but it's tough to still make that connection to a buyer who's looking at a price they may or may not be able to afford.
Well, and that's the irony, is that for an average buyer, they're going to perceive it as a lack of affordability of new homes, but that $10,000 really in your mortgage is $50 a month, and it may represent $150 of reduced operating cost. And so new homes very often, to a sophisticated buyer, represent the least total cost when you're investing in a home. It's very similar to when you buy a new car. You've got it had a larger price tag, but you may be able to avoid a tremendous amount of maintenance in those first 5 years that may actually make the total cost better than buying something that is used and requires new tires after a year and then requires a new transmission after 2 years. And so it's the way I would tell my grandma to buy a home. Yeah. So it is a very, defined strategy based on truly trying to improve people's choices and value in the marketplace, but it is a change. Yeah. And we have to inspire the market to change along with us to create acknowledgement and use of that value.
Tell me if this is unfair, but is it a little bit like saying, look, the Mercedes really is a far, far better car than the, and I shouldn't say, how about a Yugo? I don't want to say a current existing car company and upset them, but is that expensive clearly better and superior in terms of technology and cost and maintenance, et cetera, versus a car that you may be able to afford because you're that's all you can afford. Is it kind of like making that sales pitch, or am I being too rough?
I think it's an exact correct comparison. If you look at why Japanese auto manufacturers displaced the American auto manufacturers in the 80s, it wasn't because their product was cheaper to purchase, but a Honda was cheaper to operate, and buyers quickly increased their sophistication, changed the way they bought, looking at, hey, I can buy something that's going to make it 200,000 miles and not have as much maintenance as the Chevy I used to own. And it changed the marketplace. Right now, when you buy a Chevy, it is going to last 200,000 miles as well. And that's the sort of market disruption I think energy efficiency provides in the marketplace, is that once buyers understand there's more than just the first cost of a home, and that translates into the benefits, right? The less maintenance in a car, the less maintenance in a home. An energy efficient home also tends to be much more comfortable because it's just not as leaky and it's not as exposed to the outside elements. And so as buyers start to equate energy efficiency and quality and resale value and in lower operating cost, it's going to put pressure on all of the market to update its inventory to meet those new needs.
So you think the more innovative builders are going to be pushing the other folks to match them over the way Honda did with Chevy?
Yeah, we've been working with California to adopt supportive components to their new energy efficiency code to enable buyers to make those sophisticated decisions. So whether it's, energy labeling at the transaction or expanding the appraisal process to demonstrate to buyers the additional features that come in a new home that aren't available and used, or honestly, simply working with mortgage underwriters to say, hey, if you can demonstrate there's $100,000 less of operating costs, you can borrow $50,000 more in your home. And those sorts of bits of information is going to inevitably change the buyer's perspective about value and the influence of buyers, right? It's going to change the real estate industry to help buyers differentiate between good, better, and best.
Yeah, and maybe that's why the energy part of that is so important, because back to the car analogy, wasn't it a big part of buying the Honda? It wasn't just that it cost you less over time and that it lasted longer. It was also that it saved you money on gas right up front, immediately relative to that land yacht that you had in the driveway.
Exactly. People, you know, once people started getting $3 a gallon gas, yeah. they started making different value judgments, right?
Yeah.
And look at Germany. In Germany, the reason there's so much pervasive energy efficiency and renewable energy isn't because that culture values energy efficiency more than Europe. It's because it's got $1 a kilowatt power when we have 10 cents a kilowatt power. And wow. you make very different decisions when your power costs that much.
Yeah. Can we talk about, you mentioned solar just a bit ago. Can we talk about solar for a second? I know that solar is a lot more than solar in this equation we're talking about here. But how important is solar, and how do you get people to take that mindset of, hey, this is going to pay for itself over the midterm?
Yeah, there's three really important things when you think about renewable energy, especially solar renewable energy. Is one is that there is more cost-effective techniques to reduce your utility bill initially. And so that's when you hear the phrase reduce before you renew. You know, put good insulation in your house, put good windows in your house, upgrade your lights, upgrade your heating and cooling. For every dollar you're spending on those upgrades, you're creating more dollars in offsets of utility costs than if you invested in solar. But at some point, you get to a point where your house is really energy efficient, and solar does make a lot of sense to continue to progress. And solar today, the install cost, when you finance it, the monthly finance charges is less than the benefit solar provides. So solar absolutely has come of age and is a smart economic decision, all the way down to zero energy. So as long as you're above what most utilities provide when they call net metering, which is they give you credit for the solar that you're making, as long as you're not going negative, where you're actually looking for them to pay you for energy. As long as you're positive in your energy production, your solar credit from your utilities is worth more than the cost to have bought that solar and installed it in your house. So solar today is a great decision.
So in a sense, solar is paying for itself up front, if what you just described is true for your situation. Is that fair?
Absolutely, and it has for the last several years. It's the last piece, just like all the rest of this energy efficiency, is consumer awareness. There's still, the average consumer still thinks about solar like it was 1990, and you invested in it to feel good, but it wasn't necessarily cost effective.
Yeah, I think the average consumer probably still thinks that mindset of, oh, okay, it'll pay for itself in 5 or 7 years, but I may not be in this house for 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, and as long as you're financing it. Now, if you pay for it in cash, then you have to do some sort of ROI analysis, and solar's about a 7-year ROI. But if you're financing it, it's cash flow positive day one, because you're creating more benefit than cost in the minute that solar gets turned up.
Okay, that's interesting. How about, let's, on this topic, you know, it sounds like it's going to take, you mentioned underwriters, and it's going to take a lot of folks sort of swimming in the same direction to have the movement we need on energy efficiency and smarter homes. Who are the main actors going to be?
The main actors are the influencer to your 36-year-old mom who's buying the house. So the first one is realtors. The inventory that they're normally transacting, 90% is still resale. And so all the things that are happening in new codes aren't reflected in 90% of those realtors' transactions. And then the really good progressive energy efficiency is voluntary. So those represent less than 10% of the new home transactions. So you're talking about less than 1% of the transactions are being impacted. And so realtors really haven't done the education or have the skill sets and the nuances to be able to direct buyers between good, better, and best in the marketplace. So as California has adopted these new standards, I once again think it's going to be a test bed for realtors to become educated to understand this value equation differently than they have before. And then it's a great opportunity for realtors in the marketplace to differentiate themselves from competition, to be able to do this, to be able to understand, hey, what is the value of buying, from a home builder that certifies their homes to Energy Star? What should I expect is an appropriate premium in that marketplace for these better windows or this home with renewable energy? Because buyers ultimately are the ones who benefit. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen how much the real estate industry is being challenged from outside with, you know, the internet. Now you can look for location, design, and price. What realtors used to do and provide to customers is changing. And so they need to figure out a new value equation back to buyers. And I think this sits in a really smart place, which is realtors need to be that trusted expert to help buyers make better choices in the market.
So you think that you'll see a time, and probably in the not too distant future, where agents will be saying things like, okay, here's the 10 homes you're looking at in your price range location. Now let's look at their HERS scores and look at the kind of insulation they have. Do you think that'll be routine?
I think so, because what, you know, if there's 50 realtors in the marketplace, what are they telling their buyers? Hey, I can do a Google search for you, or hey, I can be an expert to help you understand total cost. And it's the realtors that get there and understand that they can differentiate themselves and create, you know, real estate is a job of referrals. And the more they can create substance and value to their buyers, the greater opportunity they're going to have to outcompete in the marketplace.
And until Zillow and Redfin make that a standard field on their home valuation, and then, oh, back to the same situation again.
The good news is they're probably not going to get there quick.
Okay. So agents, who else is going to be important in this process?
So the mortgage, for sure. There has been what they've called an energy efficient mortgage or a green mortgage for decades, and nobody uses it. And it's basically, think about the transaction if you have income-based property when you buy something, that if there's rental property associated with the property, you can take that income stream and leverage it as part of your as part of your ratio for underwriting, that offsets and adds to your income. Well, energy efficiency conceivably is the same thing. If you reduce the cost of your home by $150 a month because of superior components and more efficient appliances, that is, in an interesting way to think about it, revenue, right? It's $150 every month that you don't have to spend that is available to serve your mortgage. And when they do tests on these, energy efficient mortgages have significantly less default than a conventional mortgage, because these buyers don't have the same disposable income. They have greater disposable income because they're not utilizing it to service their utility costs. So I think that's an evolution that is important. And the good news is, once you show banks a way to risk mitigate or increase their business because they can underwrite more efficiently by taking credit for a true savings, I think there's a lot of opportunity there for banks, once again, to create better products to serve these energy efficient homes.
Do you see any movement yet from underwriters on that?
There was a piece of legislation called the SAVE Act, the Sensible Act to Value Energy, and it was bipartisan. It was Bennett and Isaacson. So Bennett's in Denver and Isaacson's in Georgia. And it went to the Senate floor, and it was part of the big energy bill, and it would have compelled all government underwritten mortgages to include total cost of operation in the underwriting ratios, and would have absolutely transformed the market to value energy efficiency. But unfortunately, the Senate hasn't been really good at getting anything done off the floor.
So it just sort of died on the vine, but
it's still out there. Okay. It's still a part of their agenda, but you know, nothing's really kind of gotten through the Energy Committee in the Senate for, you know, 10 years.
That's not a good track record. So we have agents. Yeah. We have agents. We have underwriters. Who else might be part of this process?
And then the last, I think, big influencers are appraisers, right? Yeah. The market values what the market values. And the comp analysis is not an appropriate use to say, hey, this 1974 home with, you know, 20-year-old HVAC and 50-year-old windows is the same as a brand new home with, this high SEER rated HVAC and LED lights and polyurethane spray foam insulation and solar panels. Yeah. So it's a very apples and orange comparison, and the appraisal process, the comp analysis, hasn't evolved to differentiate that. So there is an addendum. It's the AI 820.04, the energy efficient addendum that appraisers can use to add value because of renewable energy, to add value because of third-party certifications like Energy Star, or add value because it's got energy-efficient appliances. But once again, the same math that we are doing for realtors, it occurs to appraisers. It's 1% of the transactions they see. And so not everyone is an expert and has the skill set to do that kind of differentiation. But hopefully the market solves it, right? Yeah. Hopefully it's yet another opportunity for appraisers to add value by being able to properly capture the value that the average appraiser can't.
It sounds like it's one of those, you know, critical mass or adoption curve kind of situations, isn't it? Where once you get it to be, we're probably going to go from a dribble, dribble, dribble to just an explosion, and where everybody, underwriters, appraisers, everyone will be kind of again, swimming in the same direction, but we're not quite to that critical mass yet.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. It has been dribble, dribble for a decade now, and I was hoping that SAVE Act would have been the explosion that's needed to mature the market. But quite possibly this new Title 24 in California that's so significantly more aggressive than conventional code will provide that on the West Coast, and that explosion will happen and then move east.
So should we add government as a fourth actor to this scenario? I know builders don't always want to hear that, but can they be a big part of this?
It would absolutely solve the problem. I'm always cautious when I say, you know, the government should, you know, help us. But the opportunity is a no-cost challenge. It's just a government policy to recognize value. And if that's the extent of it, then I fully support legislative pieces to do those three things we've talked about, is to create consistent labeling at the transaction on total cost, to promote appraisals and to promote underwriting to value those savings in the transaction for buyers. And that will create a mechanism both for buyers to make good choices, but also to take the existing inventory, invest in improving its function, and realize it in the subsequent transaction. So it's the only mechanism I'm aware of to improve our existing inventory in a predictable way, because right now you wouldn't be necessarily wise to put a bunch of energy efficient features in an existing home because you can't count on the market giving you credit for it. Yeah. But once you can count on the market responding properly to that value, then it triggers an entire industry of retrofit.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, sometimes for good, sometimes for bad, that government actions like that can really speed things up. I mean, look at solar, where without a lot of the subsidies for solar, we're probably 5 or 10 years further behind in that technology than we are now.
Agreed.
All right, that was the first part of our conversation with CR Hero. Please join us for our next episode. We'll bring you part two and talk about home automation and about offsite construction and other disruptive factors in the building process. See you then.